Welcome to the Insider Outsider Podcast, where we have courageous conversations with business leaders around the globe about what it means to be an insider or an outsider in their organizations. We at WMFDP and FDP Global specialize in helping insiders understand their unique responsibility to engage other insiders, as well as outsiders, in partnering and building inclusive teams and organizations. I'm your host, Michael Welp, co-founder of the diversity and inclusion leadership development firm WMFDP and FDP Global, also a TEDx presenter and author of the book 4 Days to Change. Welcome to another episode of the Insider Outsider Podcast, and I'm pleased to have an awesome guest today, Joelle Martinez. I'm going to share a little bit about your background, Joelle, and welcome. Joelle is president and CEO of the Latino Leadership Institute, is a highly respected and accomplished executive, strategist, speaker, and facilitator who has earned national recognition. Prior to launching the LLI, Joelle had a 15-year career crafting impactful strategies for communication, business development, public affairs across private and public sectors. Joelle's areas of expertise include narrow leadership, Latino identity, civic engagement, demographic shifts, and workplace diversity and inclusion. In recognition of her achievements, Joelle was named one of the most powerful women by Colorado Women's Chamber of Commerce in 2017. Her remarkable contributions to the Latino community were honored with the prestigious NFL Hispanic Heritage Leadership Award in 2019. Notably, Joelle has made significant contributions to various community and business organizations, actively serving on the Hispanic Advisory Council for Coca-Cola, multiple nonprofit boards, for-profit advisory committees, and executive committees. So, awesome background, and thank you for joining, and thank you for sharing your perspective today, Joelle.
Happy to be here, Michael.
We got to connect with each other. We were both speakers at the All In Sports Business Journal Diversity Conference about a year ago.
Yeah, I think almost to the day, because I just finished running a Ragnar. So I think that's right, 1 year ago.
Yeah. And always good to connect with you. And, you know, I just so appreciate the work that you're doing and supporting of the whole Latino community, and want to hear more about your experience today and how you're experiencing the winds of what's happening today, and what others and leaders and organizations and DEI professionals might want to know about you as a resource and your company and efforts. Anything else you want to share about your background besides what I shared in the bio?
You know, it's so funny reading those bios. It's almost exhausting to hear when people are talking about it. But, you know, the one thing that I'd highlight for folks, and it really has served as the foundation for the work that we do at the Latino Leadership Institute, is so much of the research, the programming, the solutions and the tools that we've developed over the years, both to help support Latino professionals ascend throughout their career and achieve success, but also to help organizations understand why they should care about that and what they need to do, is really based on my own lived experience as a Latina professional. And, you know, we just concluded a big research project in partnership with COQUAL. And every single time we conclude one of these big research projects, it just validates my own lived experience of being one of the only in a room, of needing to, you know, be flawless in every situation because there could be no cracks or imperfection about the journey of assimilation and challenge. And so I would say that everything that you read in those bios, the underlying story that has to be told is one of, you know, trying to figure out what my identity is in the workplace, trying to find allies and sponsors and supporters to help me achieve success, and really what the cost of that success was over the years. Mm. That's really the motivation behind the work of the Latino Leadership Institute, is how do we make that journey a little less long and a little less hard for Latino professionals today?
Mm. Wow. Well, I love how you point to your lived experience as informing kind of like a grounded theory of what you created. My company also partnered with Coqol, and we did belonging studies for white men, majority men, and a number of things. I love that organization. I'm excited to hear that you all just collaborated.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll share some of it's hot off the presses. Just got back from New York, left leasing our study in New York. So I'll be able to share a little bit about that with you today.
Is there anything you want to share about the journey? When, what particularly examples of what was long and hard for you that you wished differently for other Latinos in their careers? You mentioned, you know, sorting out who you are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things that came up in the Coqol study, again, that is kind of reinforced by my own lived experience is this forced assimilation to get ahead. In the Coqol study in 2016, it was reported that, you know, nearly 8 out of 10 Latino professionals were reporting that they had to change part of their persona, hide or diminish part of their identity, almost wear a mask at work in order to succeed and get ahead. And that, you know, that's forced assimilation. You know, interestingly enough, in my own life and career, I had that as well. You know, folks that would tell me, you know, maybe don't wear the bright, bold colors, or, you know, maybe not the big dangly earrings if you want to be taken seriously. But more importantly, even how I represented myself, if I was, you know, strong on a point, I could be strong, but not overly strong, because then I'm just aggressive. And so constantly I was confronted with these experiences of, so in other words, the message I'm getting is, I'm just not good enough how I am. So therefore, I'm going to have to change who I am in order to fit in and get ahead. And that was in the 2016 study. You know, what we found in this newest study that we just released last week is that that message of forced assimilation continues today. Latino professionals in the workplace are still reporting all these years later that they have to change who they are in order to get ahead in their careers. And more alarming is that even when they have mentors and sponsors, 68% of their mentors and sponsors are reinforcing a message to our Latino professionals that you got to change who you are. So again, we leverage data and real life experience to say, well, we know the cost of that. Every single time I had to change how I dressed, how I showed up, it affected my confidence. It affected my willingness to speak up and share my expertise. It affected my desire to even go after higher level roles because I just thought I would have to give more and more of myself away in order to do so. So these studies and this work, it is grounded in practical experience, and those are the things we're trying to solve for at the Institute.
I love that. I mean, what better mission than to help people, you know, create partnerships and cultures where people get to stay who they are and bring their natural talents and resources and feel. And then the organization benefits, the blessings of that. It's like,
absolutely. I mean, if I don't feel like I can be myself and I feel like I have to change who I am and my confidence is diminished, then my ultimate input and the outcomes of that in an organization are going to be diminished. You're not getting everything that I have to give because there's such a cost to me being in the game to begin with. And so, again, it's important for us, the way that LLI views this is it's important for us to work with Latino professionals to understand that their identity and their uniqueness and their call it, you know, their culture and their lived experience is an asset. And we have to step into those spaces. It's equally important for us to help organizations understand why that is so important and what the business case is for them to make sure that they are taking out this kind of forced assimilation patterns and replacing it with letting people, you know, really show up as their true authentic self.
Yeah. And the statistic that you shared about 68% of mentors reinforcing that message of forced assimilation. And I think about, I know a lot of, in my work, a lot of white men unconsciously mentor other people to be like white men. you know, to suck it up, you know, to pull away the emotions and take on some can-do attitude. Don't show hesitancy, confusion, all these other things that actually just really get in the way when they're overused of creating authentic dialogue and collaboration. It just locks people down.
Yeah. You know? And I think it's important in those situations to also distinguish between impact and intent. And most sponsors and mentors have good intentions, right? Not all, yeah, but most. And they want to see you succeed. However, the impact of some of these really kind of archaic and very damaging messages through a lens of what success professionalism is through a white male lens, it just doesn't fit anymore. And so, again, mm-hmm. I think it's really important to say that I don't think that the mentors and sponsors are trying to derail careers in any way. I think just the opposite, but yet reinforcing these messages are not going to have the outcomes that they're hoping for.
Yeah, it may actually be an intent of being protective or mm-hmm. helping you prepare.
Right.
And yet some of these norms are actually, I think, outdated for white men too. You know, we can't lead if we don't get into our hearts as well. We can't lead if we try to oversimplify, take out all the uncertainty, and, you know, jump to problem solving and fixing something we don't fully understand instead of slowing down. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm curious, one thing you mentioned about that edge between feeling like you've got to be strong and then all of a sudden you're judged as overly assertive or aggressive. And I know that's something that women experience in the catalyst data and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about how that gets compounded as a Latino woman too, in addition?
Yeah. I talk often when I'm about my trifecta. I am the trifecta when it comes to things. I am a woman. I am a Latina. And I'm a mom, and I'm going to pull all of that together. And in the workplace, especially with the professional norms and the expectations of the workplaces, it's really hard to come to the table with that trifecta as mine. As a woman, and a lot of times it's called the gap within the gap for many of us, right? Because not only are we facing gender discrimination and gender stereotypes, like you can't come across too strong, otherwise you're aggressive, or you can't show any emotion at all because then you're too emotional. That is true on that gender. But then we have the ethnicity lens of it, racial ethnicity lens of it as well. And when that comes to the table, you know, so often I'm told, well, you're just so passionate about things. And that word now almost is a little frustrating for me because I'm not passionate. I'm actually quite informed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an expert on these issues. It's just, yeah, it's just how I show it. And things like you come across so articulate. That's another one of those kind of, it's death by a thousand cuts each and every time, because again, they're perpetuating stereotypes, not just as a woman, but now as a Latina woman. And you're constantly facing that, which again is chipping away at your confidence. It's chipping away at your desire to put yourself forward and your desire to really add value to the organization at your full level. And then the other piece is being a mom, and especially for Latinas, where family values are always going to be core and central to many Latinos, 40% of Latinas will not take a promotion if it means more time away from home. And so I talk to companies about this all the time that want to get more Latinas in senior management position, but yet they're not willing to see that it isn't the way they describe the job. It isn't even how they promote the job out there in the universe. That if the job is going to take away and not be accommodating for some of these factors, at the end of the day, our decision may not be whether or not we're qualified or we like the salary. It may just simply be because it's too much time away from home. We can't take mm-hmm. that job. And that final reinforcement is pay equity issues. Mm-hmm. Again, gender, Latina. For Latinas, we make 57 cents on the dollar for same job as our male white colleagues do. It is the largest of all the gaps. And quite frankly, it hasn't closed at all in 30 years. I think we've added 2 cents in 30 years mm-hmm. to the gap. And so how can I feel like I am valued and I'm valuable and willing to even give more to the company, meaning less at home, if I'm not being paid at an equal measure to my white male colleagues? So all of those things combined are the gap within the gap of being a woman, being a Latina, and being a mom in the professional workspace. And those are really hard barriers to overcome.
Yeah. Awesome. Laying those layers out. And I think of on the white male side, we overuse the sameness lens to understand the workplace and people and underuse the difference lens. So we assume that, you know, your challenges are the same as my challenges or your terrain is the same as my terrain. And that comes from perhaps an intent to be colorblind, to be gender blind, to treat everybody quote unquote the same. And I just want to remind the audience that the impact of that is that I, as a leader, am blind to the challenges that you face, the other subtle dynamics that you're navigating from being a mom, from being Latino, from being a woman. And it's like, so how do I balance both? I can see us all as human, having similar hopes and fears, but how do I also step away from that overuse of the sameness lens and see difference, which, you know, intercultural development inventory measures the continuum of how you step into from denial of difference to acceptance, appreciation, and not also assuming negativity around difference either. But
why your work is so important, Michael. I mean, truly, honestly, because, you know, it's interesting to me, just the lack of understanding and conversation and curiosity around those differences. And, you know, also, I have to pull something out that's really important, and it came out of this Coke-Ball study as well, is that it's also not fair to lump even all Latino experiences together. Listen, I have a level of white privilege that not all Latinos do. Afro-Latinos don't, yeah. Asian Latinos don't. And what really came out of the most recent Coke-Ball study is that issue of colorism and the different experiences. I mean, if you are a white passing Latino, you are more likely going to feel represented and feel like there's some fairness and representation in your company. But if you are Afro-Latino or darker skin Latino, your experience with representation is very different, even though we all live under a larger Latino hub. And I think that this goes to explaining why empathy, conversation, curiosity are at the root of connectivity and advancement around these efforts, because I'm not going to assume that my Latino professional experience is the same as an Afro-Latina from the Dominican Republic. Their experience is going to be very different potentially than mine. And so just as white folks need to understand, generally speaking, what some of our experiences are, we have to not be blinded by some of the intersectionalities and diversity lenses that live even within the Latinidad, because it is very different. And that's why I think the work you do and these conversations are so critically important, because we don't want to keep creating solutions to problems we don't understand. And I think the lack of understanding of what we're actually trying to solve for is probably why we don't see the advancement that we're hoping for.
Yeah. Well, and there are efforts that are wanting to simplify things, wanting to take out the uncertainty, which means I over assume sameness within the Latino community. Once I understand what you want, it's like, no, you may want to refer more to Latino. Somebody else may want to identify more Hispanic, the light skin, dark skin differences and all those variations. I love that you're naming curiosity, empathy, the listening to understand versus debate skill. All those are, as people listening, who, how can I be better allies? It's really just starting to use those skills more and seeing what can I see with new eyes? What can I know at a heart level too, not just a head level, and to see others' lived experiences as sources of data, valid data.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The Latino professionals, you know, it's not easy. These are hard things for any company or any organization to solve for. But it is always really fascinating to me how often we skip that listening part. You know, so they kind of come down from the top, new policies, new procedures, goals that they want to set around things. But how often do they sit down with the communities that they're trying to implement the policies on behalf of and really ask them, like, what are the challenges to you facing? Why aren't you, as a Latina qualified professional, going after these promotions? You know, and it might surprise them to find out that it actually has nothing to do with the job itself and everything to do with something much bigger than the job. And it really is fascinating to me that it's probably the least expensive thing that we can do, other than giving our time and attention and being open to it, but so critically important as a step to sit down, have conversation, hear directly from the folks first before you try to implement new policies that may or may not even be at the heart of the challenges that these folks are facing.
Yeah. It's funny because I think a lot of white men don't count listening as an action. They're like, I have to take action to have worth or some value to measure. And really listening is, you actually get credit for that. You actually get count for that. And some people want something witnessed. Some people want something solved. You know, what is the intent of listening? But yeah, all those mentoring programs are really rich sources of co-mentoring where we learn more and get more value out of that. It's like there's a connection really to humbleness. Some of the dominant white male culture, you know, you're supposed to show confidence in doing and telling, and it overusing that gets us into arrogance and challenges of that. It's like, how do I reconnect to my own humility and give myself permission to not know, to be confused, to be clueless about some of this stuff, and to name that so others have more permission for that. So,
And I mean, what's that old saying? Like, you know, I won't remember what you did. I will always remember how you make me feel. And being heard and being seen. Let's say you don't have the budget to course correct on pay equity today, right? And that's a real, you got to figure out the finances around pay equity. You need to do it. No more waiting. I'm not giving you that one.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, listening, being present, showing curiosity, showing care, showing concern, you know, showing up, you know, when leaders actually show up at these types of things. I mean, I don't know how many, you know, Latino ERG, BRG events I've been to, resource group events I've been to, and the senior executive team is nowhere to be seen, you know, and it's that level of disconnect, showing up, listening, hearing, creating that level of empathy and trust. I mean, sure, if you have to wait a couple more years to get my pay, I'm going to give you a little bit more grace in that. If I actually feel like you value me and you're invested in me. But so often those things like showing up, which don't have, you know, the price tag to it that maybe pay equity may, those are not happening. So I think that those are some of the steps that are just so critically important. While we fix the big problems, we need to be present, and that just doesn't happen enough.
Yeah. Well, I think of, you know, you spoke well to this a year ago at the All Business Journals, you know, the business opportunity to penetrate more Latino marketplaces and things. It's like, not only can I show up and understand your world as an employee, but to co-explore opportunities to have more success in your market of Latino market and worldwide. It's like a no-brainer to, you know, there's a opportunity here that's not being leveraged.
$3.2 trillion. That is what the Latino annual GDP is today. If it were an independent country, it would be the fifth largest economy in the world. And it is the third fastest growing, only behind China and India. Latinos are the second largest fasting growing demographic. And so as we look at the business case and the economic issues, I mean, you want a future market? It's Latinos. we're worth about $3.4 trillion in purchasing power every year. That is something you cannot just ignore. And when it comes to small businesses and starting them and thriving in them, I mean, this, the economy is really going to come down to unlocking Latino potential now and for the foreseeable future as we become 33% and 40% the United States population. Our economic contributions, our economic superpower become even more so. So if we're not elevating our Latino talent into decision makers and key marketing positions and key executive, if we're not in the boardroom where strategy gets developed, then there's a lack of connectivity and really seizing on this new market, this growing market, this powerful market. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, you're spot on that the economic business case for investing in Latinos and unlocking, it's quite frankly undeniable.
Mm-hmm. Did you mention 30 to 40% of the population?
Yeah, that's what our projections are. So when we get to 2060, right now we're about 20% of the population. Yeah. We'll grow to a third. And then, you know, we'll kind of peak around that, probably somewhere around 40, somewhere between 2060, 2070 is what. And growth is slowing down a bit. Actually, despite what you may hear on the news, less immigration. Actually, immigration's been down since the 1990s. So you're just not growing populations the way you were. So that may be impacted in the year projections. But bottom line is, second largest, fastest growing. Our biggest population share is under the age of 5. So you just imagine, you know, just how significant that is. And for the workforce, for our employers, you know, we're about 30 million in the workforce today. We represent about 1 in 5 in the workforce. That's set to double in the coming decade. So we'll be around 60 million workers in the workforce in about 2060. So this is significant. The workforce of tomorrow, the market of tomorrow, demographics of tomorrow are going to be overwhelmingly more and more Latino.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I love the picture that you paint as an opportunity. Is there anything you want to share about the Latino Leadership Institute and what you're about and how organizations can tap into that?
Yeah, thanks for that opportunity, Michael. The Latino Leadership Institute was formed 10 years ago. We're celebrating 10 years this year, something that we're really proud of. And it was based on everything we've talked about today, is that we know that the demographics are going to shift, but we also know that demography is not destiny. And today, Latinos, despite our contributions economically in the workforce, face the highest leadership opportunity gap of any group at 450%. And if we do nothing in this moment to change that, that's going to grow to about 600%, meaning that we're underrepresented where it counts across the board. So 10 years ago, with the LLI set course, and we knew that we had to be the bridge of between the Latino talent and opportunity in career advancement and business growth. So today, the LLI runs programs and shares content to help Latino professionals and entrepreneurs navigate much of what we talked about today, address some of these barriers, build social capital, build technical capital in order to achieve success. But we also work with organizations to help inform them of the why and the what and the how, and partner with organizations like COQUAL so that we could get valuable data and research in the hands of the decision makers, so that their solutions are data informed, realistic to the experiences that these folks are feeling, and actually ultimately get you results. So LLI is proud that 96% of our graduates of our program achieve career advancement within the first year. They go on to be good mentors and sponsors. They go on to lead companies and organizations, and they're in every sector and industry. So we're really proud of the fact that today we have alumni in 30 states and multiple countries, work with Fortune 500 companies across the United States, and are just continuing to grow each and every day.
That's awesome. Wow. And is that latinoleadership.org, or what would be the website for folks to sign?
Yeah, Latinos Lead, www.insideroutsider.org is where you can find out about our programs, how to get involved, how to join one of our programs, bring one of our programs into your company. It's a wealth of information. The other thing is I would plug the Insights tab on the website, because there you will find stories, you will find data, you will find, we just released something last week from our own expert of alumni, from our graduates that are all in DEIB roles from their own perspectives. And so it's just such a resource on that website page, and I definitely encourage you to look for it.
Awesome. And the research, the new program report on Qualqual. Qualqual is Q-O-Q-U-A-L, and they have a website. What's the name of the newest report that you all collaborated on?
It's called More Than a Monolith, The Advancement of Hispanic and Latino Talent. And this is a follow-up from the 2016 report, and it's extraordinary. 2,300 full-time employees were part of this interview. Many, many industries are reflected in that research. Months and months went into this work, and it really is important research that everyone should get their hands on.
Awesome. Great resources. I know one question that some people have is, you know, they can confuse sometimes between whether to refer to or whether people identify as Latino or more Hispanic. And is there anything you share about your experience about for leaders who are sorting that out?
Yeah. What to call Latinos is clear as mud. it is complex. I mean, my own story is a perfect example. I mean, when I was younger and growing up, identified as Hispanic, sometimes Chicano. And it's important to qualify that. Like, I'm a ninth generation Coloradan. So my family has been, and it probably dates back even more. So I am the true Southwestern Latino with mestizo, which means indigenous, Spanish, Mexican, even some Irish in there. My grandmother on my mom's side was Irish. So like many Latinos, you know, this blend. And so growing up in the Southwest in Colorado, Hispanic and Chicano were the two terms most commonly used during that time. And then I went to school in California and I met other Latinos, and I heard the term Latino for the first time really in college. And understanding that Hispanic, you know, I was so surprised to find out that people didn't like the term Hispanic, or that that wasn't a term that they had ever even heard before. And I understood that Latino really allowed us to expand who could fit. And so I became a Latina. That felt and still remains good for me. You know, younger generations like and are going with more gender neutral terms like Latinx and Latine. But I will tell you, even in the Qualqual study, I think it was less than 2%. A majority of Latinos today are still going to either choose Hispanic or Latino. Those are the two most prominent terms that are used today. That being said, nearly 60% of Latinos don't have a preference or a single term that they use continually. Most often you use terms interchangeably. And the other important thing to note is that a lot of this is US-based, because as we were in this research asking people, I mean, one of the most powerful quotes out of the research is, I didn't become Latino until I moved to the United States. And this is someone moving here from outside the United States. Like, these are socially constructed terms. And it'll be really interesting, because in the 2020 census, you had multiracial increasing by, you know, nearly 250%. In the government just changed this year how you identify. So you no longer have a two-step process in the United States to say, choose your race, then choose your identity. Instead, now there's a long list of things, and you can check as many of those as you want, including Hispanic, Latino. I say all of this to say that identity remains a social construct when it comes to race and ethnicity. And it is very fluid. It is very complex. And the best thing that people could do is ask what people prefer to be called and try to meet them as much where they are as possible, because there is no one term that is there. And I'm evident of that as I've kind of experienced multiple identifiers throughout my own life.
Yeah. And I love the landscape that you just laid out. And I would, I think, you know, the other thing that shows up is there's there's the inside out, how do you identify yourself? And then there's the outside in, as you said, how others identify you, who some folks would come from Peru and say, I was white, but in the US, all of a sudden I'm seen as a person of color. And that, you know, those inside out, outside in, both of those are sort of elements of that complexity.
Absolutely. It's why terms too like minority doesn't work if you're dealing with someone who just moved to the United States. I mean, they may feel it now, but that whole framework doesn't exist if you come from, you know, Latin American or South American right. countries. And, you know, I think the conclusion that we could all come to is that identity is a complex, you know, I call it an artichoke. There's so many layers, and our goal in the practices that we do in the leadership training that we do is to help people understand the importance of each of those layers. And that by working through those layers, we're just trying to get the heart of who someone is. Mm. And that's what this work is truly all about. And especially for Latinos and the experience, I mean, we speak many languages, we come from many countries, we have many different experiences. And despite all those differences, there's commonalities that hold us closely together. And that's why, that's why I think we don't want to divide. We don't want to make the differences keep us apart, because there's so much that just makes the Latino community woven together, vibrant, connected. Mm-hmm. And, but I do. I mean, I wish I had a more beautiful analogy or metaphor, but it truly is an artichoke. There's so many layers to one's identity. And that's why these conversations, curiosity, empathy, storytelling, really getting to know someone at an individual level mm-hmm. is so critically important.
Yeah. And I think you beautifully named both the individual group paradox. It's like, yes, you can look at the group and be curious about multitudes of the group, but also see the individual. Mm-hmm. And I feel compelled to say, you know, what for you is at the heart of your identity or who you are? What would you say sort of sparkles in that comes up for you?
I think it comes down to values. I think I tie it back to my Latino family and culture and values. I mean, the value of family. I mean, I wear my mom necklace every day. I'm unapologetic about the fact that I will always prioritize my family, and you will know that. It's why in one of the COQUAL recommendations, we have part of this work to achieve success will be redefining professionalism. If professionalism is being stoic, unemotional, and only focused on work, yeah, I don't want a part of that. That's not who I am. So I think at the heart of who I am are these values that we're driven in that I actually think are a benefit to companies, are a benefit to the bottom line. I mm-hmm. think these things are important. I think food and music and family are, it's who I am. And whether I'm in a business meeting looking at financials or not, I think I bring that to the table. And I think that's a value and an asset that's really important. So that's at the heart of my Latinidad. It is family, it is food, it is culture, community, it's service, servant leadership, I think is a big piece of that.
Mm-hmm. I love the multi dimensions that you just named. And, you know, in some of my studies cross culturally, because diversity, you know, you can have a lens of social justice and what are insider outsider dynamics and what are others navigating. I mean, you can look through a cultural lens too. And my experiences of, you know, those of us that are white or white male, we never leave our culture. It's like, what water? We don't even know we have a culture. It's like, but it's that as some of the, you know, redefining professionalism as I don't have to leave my emotions at the door. I don't have to leave relating and connecting at the door. Actually, it's like, and the studies of some cultures, you know, you don't just jump in. And as I wrote a book chapter about white male culture with Ed Schein, and he describes it as you build the minimal relationship in order to get a task done. Mm-hmm. And I think Latino culture and other cultures, some other cultures too, spend more investment in building relationship, and then the task comes naturally. because you sit down and connect and build that time. I don't know if that resonates for you, but.
Mm-hmm. I mean, collectivism, I mean, when we look at really important values that I believe Latinos bring in all situation, collectivism is one of many. And that is, you know, we understand the power of we. We understand the power of collaboration. It is very rarely the power of I or me. And that's a value to organizations. And seeing that kind of community developed within a company is critically important. I say this all the time. And one of the things that you mentioned in my bio is my neuro leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not just training Latinos to be leaders. We're training leaders for the 21st century. And 21st century leadership, you have to be productive. You have to be collaborative, right? Everything, you have to overcome, you have to be agile because of the VUCA world that we live in. And I inherently believe that a lot of Latino values and culture and just the way that we operate and navigate the world are actually really strong foundations to be all of those things, to be more productive, to be more collaborative, to be more connected to people in meaningful ways. And that leads to agility as well and overcoming some challenges, not to mention the grit, the determination, and, you know, all of those things. But that's why I'm so optimistic, despite headwinds we might be facing in our industry. I'm optimistic because I actually think that in the workplace is of such value, and it's so refreshing that I really can't wait to see those things really, truly be valued and amplified in the workplace.
Yeah, as we recognize the interdependence that we really, truly have as a world, as a country, all those values you mentioned are critical for success in collaborating. How do we create partnerships and cultures where everybody thrives? Those threads you mentioned are some of the keys, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I believe it. And I see it every day. Once we can amplify those things, they're good things. Mm-hmm. Are they different than maybe what we have, you know, the framework that in the paradigm that we've been operating on? Sure they are, but different doesn't mean bad. Different actually can mean quite good.
Yeah. And I think about, when I think about traditional white male culture, I don't say it's bad. It's created a lot of things, but the overuse of it becomes a weakness. And at a personality level, a lot of managers and leaders derail themselves by overusing their strengths. You know, a detailed person becomes a micromanager stuff. So at a cultural level, how do we balance these different skill sets and strengths, including balancing more relational orientation and more empathy and more connection and relatability and more curiosity, more humbleness. So those are some of the elements. And of course, I like the food and the music too.
I mean, all of it. I mean, it's just good. You know, and it's interesting when I'm talking to, I spend as much time with Latino professionals as I do white male executive leaders or just, you know, executive leaders in general. And it really is amazing, actually, you know, when you just said it triggered for me, you know, when we don't step out of our culture, we can't really see our culture as a culture. Mm-hmm. There's kind of this, you know, we just live in our world and we don't know that, you know, what that world is if we don't have perspective. It's really interesting when you open up conversations, just how similar, you know, some of these value lines actually are when we're allowed to acknowledge them, when we give ourselves the ability to. And just how often that if, you know, a lot of the leaders today feel forced to show up in one way, even though they probably have different values or a desire to lead differently, but the paradigm hasn't shifted enough. And there's, and I just think that it's really interesting to me because I know a lot of white male executives, for example, that, mm-hmm. I mean, I'd say we're 98% similar in a way that mm-hmm. we see the world and the values. Yeah. A lot of times they're not allowed to share that, though. And I think that's part of the paradigm problem that we're trying to fix. I remind them kindly, they're the ones in power to be able to shift it. Or, you know, so they have the ability to. I just don't know that they've done that yet.
Yeah. And I remember working with a government lab, and this one white male was like, I was asked to be a leader. So I was lead. And then they kept giving me feedback that I'm too heart-centered, that I'm too emotional, I'm too analytical. And so I tried to do it differently. And he's like, oh, this just isn't me. So he stopped being a leader. And a couple years later, they're like, no, we really want you to be a leader. And he's like, okay, but I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to be a heart-centered leader, which is who I am. And he found his confidence to do that. But the more, if he's an insider as a white male, the more he models there's more than one way to lead and to lead from variety. It more gives others permission who, like you said, at the beginning of our conversation, are questioning whether they have to code shift, wear a mask, and not be themselves.
Right. So. And I would, for folks listening, a great book to read. I just did a fireside chat with the former CEO of United, Oscar Munoz. And his book, Turnaround Time, is such a good read. And I bring it up. One, it was really interesting. And I told him this. It's at Oscar. I was, you know, you read some of these books and you're just like, this is boring. Wah, wah. Heard it before. Turnaround Time is a really great book. It's an easy read. So insightful. And one of the things, he lives by many mantras and he's led by many mantras. But this relationships matter and lead with empathy, and the story of how he turned around. And again, it points to the business model. This isn't just about making you feel good. Yeah. He was tasked with turning around United that was pretty much ready to tank at the time. So it was about a business outcome, but how he went about it and the way that he built relationships before he acted and put the customer and the employee first, even above, you know, some of the investors. The story around Turnaround Time shows how leading with empathy, leading with connectivity, again, the things he knew as a Latino, and I mean, his own personal story is woven into this as well. But it shows that you can actually move your companies forward by bringing that to the table. So a perfect example of what I think you and I are talking about, Michael, I think comes in this book, Turnaround Time, about how these are actually good ways of leading, different, but good. And it creates a business opportunity for the companies.
Mm. That sounds beautiful. I look forward to it.
Yeah, you got to read the book. It's so good.
Yeah.
He'll be happy I'm promoting it.
All right. Well,
it is. And I don't promote books that I don't like. It was really, I think, insightful and one that everyone should read.
You know, it also reminds me of in this world, in this day of social media, and people end up falling to fear and anger, and they trust that sometimes more than love. And I think some of what we're talking about is remembering how to build partnerships and cultures that are based on love, respect, like the listening, the connecting. So, you know, I love what Adrienne Marie Brown talks about. She's wrote Emergent Strategy, says, you got to move at the speed of trust. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to move at the speed of home, finding our own home of who we are, each of us, and being able to connect and find that in each other.
Yeah. I can't imagine a more important time. I do. I say this often, and not to be dramatic, but I do believe we're at an inflection point. Mm-hmm. We stand at a crossroads in so many ways, right? Demographic shifts, the economy is different, the middle class is all but eroded. What does that look like? AI and technology are going to be disruptive for us. You know, it's democracy and all of these things. I mean, we got to remember that this great human experience is... It's a risky one, and it's one that takes work, and it's not a guaranteed. You got to work towards it. You got to invest in it. You got to protect it. And I just think that we are in one of those moments where we are really going to have to face the challenges and make the investments, because those things, at the end of the day, I think it's what brings us pride and hope, but it is volatile. And I hope that leaders today, and that we understand that we all have power, some smaller, some bigger, but we all have a power and a role to play into protecting and safeguarding those things. Mm. And I just don't think that in recent history, you know, I was looking at some things from the 1960s and 50s as a parallel, but every time was a little bit different. But I think in this moment, it is entirely different. We're demographically different. We're economically different. Technology has changed things. Social media and access to that has changed things. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is our inflection point, and the actions we take and the decisions we make are going to have a ripple effect for generations to come. And I don't want to be alarmist, but at the end of the day, we do have a stake in connecting with people, respecting people, trusting people. Mm-hmm. And if those things don't happen, you've seen the other side of it. You've seen the disconnect. You've seen the fear and the fighting become, you know, the predominant way that we are relating and are not relating to one another. And so we know what the other side of that coin looks like. We've seen it over the last few years. Now is the time where we have to really focus in, really dig in deep and say, I'm not willing to accept a world where we place less value on people because of who they are or where they come from. I'm not willing to accept a world where just because you're a Latina, you get paid less. I'm not willing to accept a world where Latinos are 20% of the workforce and only 5% of executive leadership. I'm not willing to accept a world where people like Michael and I can't sit and have conversation and grow empathy and trust. I'm just not. And I hope that more people will join you and your work and the work that we're doing at the LLI, because I got to believe that most people won't accept a world like that.
Yeah. Well, I feel that is a great, we're starting to close up our conversation, but it's sort of a challenge of who are we and who do we want to be? And this time in our country and in our world, it's like, I think all of us, if we dig into ourselves deep enough, we find these authentic values or these parts of us that want equality, that want a world of opportunity for everyone. And we want to create a space where everybody can thrive. And that takes surfacing, building awareness, and disrupting things that aren't aligned with that and recreating.
And an acknowledgement that, you know, these systems were built with intention to not allow everyone to succeed and to not allow everyone to be together and to work together and to support one another. And so this, the systems, the work, all of it has to be addressed. And I have faith, I have hope, because I see it every day. I see Latinos stepping into their power. I see businesses thriving because of it. I see communities coming together in conversations. I also see the headwinds and the challenges. But the only way that we will succeed at the end of the day to achieve our goals is by working together, about listening, talking, and committing our effort and our time and being result in that work.
Yeah. When you spoke of a minute ago, it reminds me of what we call our fourth paradox, which is it's not my fault and I'm responsible. Not asking you to take blame for what all kinds of generations have created as systems of exploitation, but I am responsible for understanding how insider-outsider dynamics play out today and how to create a world that works for everyone.
Yeah. And don't be fooled, Michael. Again, not an alarmist, but what we're seeing in states like Texas, where, you know, if you're in the community or the college system, all the DEIB jobs and positions have been eliminated, where, you know, what we're trying to teach people and inform people about those systems, about history, matters so much as you're trying to create a different future. And if we begin to remove that reality from our teachings and our understandings, we're going in the wrong direction. And so I just think it's really important. This inflection moment is that not all things are moving in the right direction. In fact, some things are headed in the very wrong direction. And again, to your point, I have some agency around this. All of us have some role and responsibility in that. And we can't just sit back and say, but that's Texas. No. This is what's happening in the United States today, and we all need to be informed and activated around these issues.
Yeah, because it's Texas, but it's also Florida. It's also just legislations in different states is being copied exact for exact and dropped into other places and without really the conversations about the impact of that. I was reading an article just this morning about this some group that's anti-public education actually wanting to educate people in race dynamics in Florida. And that's like, wow, You know, that's fascinating that they actually can do that, because it's becoming illegal in the public school system. So yeah, it's like, we got to understand.
I have 14-year-old twins. I'll kind of end on the 14-year-old twins. And every day, it's this thing that keeps me up at night, but gets me going in the morning is, you know, we do this work so that future generations have it better. I mean, everything is, you know, you want to create new pathways, you want to create new opportunities. The last thing we want to do is be the generation that made it worse.
Yeah.
And that's the role and responsibility that we all hold today, is that when we think through this lens of diversity, equity, inclusion, economic prosperity, you know, social success, this great social experiment that we're all a part of, we do not want to be the generation that took us back generations. And the reality is, depending on where you live and who you are, you could be worse off today than you were just a few years ago or even a year ago. And that is the role and responsibility we have, is that's unacceptable. And I'm not willing to live in a world where my kids have less value, less rights, less opportunity, less knowledge about the history than I did. I mean, that's just not okay. So I think that's the moment we're living in. That's why your work, our collective work and collaboration is so important, because that's that inflection point I'm talking about. We can't make it worse. Our whole goal is to make things better, and we've got to work together to do that.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And I love that sort of explanation point of what legacy are we leaving? And what will our kids see having us left as a legacy? And the myths that I think that are driving this, some of the retreats backwards, or somehow it's a zero-sum game, the other's game, whites or white men lose, or white people are being replaced, and all of that, I find myths and propaganda that used to stoke fear. And, you know, there is plenty in my bones from 27 years of this work, plenty I've seen white men gain in all of this journey in their livelihood of home, work, family. There is nothing but mutual benefit and gain for all of us to thrive together. So
agreed. And I just really appreciate the work that you all are doing to amplify that, to bring that level of acknowledgement and care around the topic. I think far too often it is a blame game or an othering that takes place. And again, you can't solve the problem that you're trying to solve by introducing the same problems as the solution.
Right.
So I was so looking forward to today's conversation and hopefully future collaboration between us, because I do believe it's not a zero-sum game. I mean, we really do have to show the wins for everyone. And I know that they exist, and we have to work together. And there's just no other way. And so this was, you know, really exciting. I was really looking forward to it, because I just appreciate the work that you all are doing. Because it's not, you gain so much by being connected to other human beings, regardless of what and who and how they identify and what their lived experiences are. I mean, that's the win. Is just humanity again.
Yeah. You're well said. And I deeply appreciate meeting you and getting to stay connected and the conversation today. So anything else you want to say in closing?
LatinosLead.org. You can learn about our programmings, how we partner with companies, the research, the co-qual research. It's not officially completely public yet. Give it a couple weeks, but it'll be up on our insights tab. Another great resource. I just think, be informed, be open, be willing to partner and collaborate with organizations. And definitely, Michael, continue the work you're doing, because it's so valuable and important.
Thank you. Well, thanks for today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for listening to the Insider Outsider podcast, where we have courageous conversations with business leaders about what it means to be an insider or an outsider in their organizations. We at WFTP and FTP Global specialize in getting insiders to understand their unique responsibility to engage other insiders as well as outsiders in building inclusive teams and organizations. Our work takes us around the globe, transforming people and companies towards a more inclusive world. For the show notes about this podcast and more about the work of WMFDP and FTP Global, visit wmfdp.com/podcast.